Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Pisgah Podcast.
Again, we are your hosts, Drew and Mangler, and we're coming to you live from Berm Peak.
Right there at the top of Berm Peak, about to drop into the Cannon Center.
The Cannon Center. So, have you got any news or updates from the past week?
Well, fortunately, you and I got to do a corporate retreat mountain bike ride with our friend Tim Haggerty from Norco. We actually rode on some south-facing dry trails in the upstate South Carolina region, so that was good.
Yeah, it was good to have a corporate retreat, and those trust falls make me feel way better about work now.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then I attempted to ride at Canoga on Saturday. Freeze thaw was pretty much killing most everything there, and so I kind of started avoiding a lot of the other trails and just stuck to like the new Double Black Tech Trail and Paint It Black, and had a good time, but you know, the freeze thaw was going in hard on Tortuga towards the end.
Yeah, I could see that there, but you know, that's kind of the good thing about a bike park too, is that the maintenance schedule is way more on top of things, and they have a plan for it. So, you know, you can go out there and ride in those conditions and not have to make it somebody else's problem and feel bad about it because you got to pay to go.
Yeah, Callie did voice some slight disconcern for winter freeze thaw destroying her trails while we were pedaling up. I think her phrase was, "Ah, I hate winter."
Who can blame her? Winter sucks.
Yeah, bless your heart.
Yeah, so I was thinking about this. So you and I both have pretty steep yards, probably a little too steep to have a private pump track in your yard, but have you ever considered building like a trail feature or a skill spot in your yard?
Yeah, Jessica and I have looked at it. We are on a little less than an acre here, and it is steep. It drops probably 60 to 80 feet, according to my most precise topo map that I have. And there's definitely some options for cutting in some stuff. The problem with my neighborhood here is a couple of years ago, like one switchback down from me was a huge landslide that took out the road and like blocked people up on the mountain for a couple of days. So I'm kind of hesitant to throw a shovel in the ground in certain spots. So I haven't really like gone down that road yet, but I've definitely eyeballed a couple of spots to at least have like a little line to, you know, test the brakes out, or a little technical climbing feature or something.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about it too, and in my yard's about 40 to 60 feet draining off to the back. But you know, the more I got to thinking about it, the more I realized that even if I had a more friendly yard to build in, I'm thinking that it might not be worth the effort. It just looks like a lot of work, and it might be better spent working on actual trails or even going out and riding.
You know, that's exactly kind of what my thought was too. Like, I could put in a bunch of work here in my yard to get like 50 feet or 100 feet of trail going, when I could just volunteer that time to work with Pisgah Area Sorba or something like that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, but I guess the advantage to it would be that you would always have a spot to ride in. But, you know, for me, I'm not even sure that that's even always a good thing, because if I just had to go out of the back door to go ride, then I'm not really sure that I'd be that motivated to go somewhere else and ride. And as much as anything, mountain biking for me is just, it's a getaway. It's something to go and do and to leave it all behind and kind of have a release.
Well, Drew, the good thing about that would be at least you would be riding more.
That's true. I should be riding more one way or another.
Yeah, so this week, speaking of building bike stuff, we had the chance to sit down with Seth from Seth's Bike Hacks and Berm Peak to talk about his new venture working with the city of Canton in that new project over there of building some new trail features. And if you haven't heard about it, well, here you go. All right, Seth, thanks for being on the show. I know you got a lot going on, so appreciate the time. What was it that made you want to start a bike video YouTube channel in the first place?
Well, what's funny is I never intended on starting a bike YouTube channel. I think we all technically have a YouTube channel. If you can log into YouTube, then you can post videos. And a lot of people do post videos. They just put something up there so they could send it to their friend or whatever. And they don't really intend on making something that a wide audience is going to watch. And I was kind of doing the same. But having a little experience video editing, I really did take some time in posting videos. Just little product reviews and funny little skits and things. And people liked them. And they kept coming back. And at the time, I didn't like really log into YouTube and subscribe to stuff. I thought that all of YouTube was just cat videos. I didn't know there were people that did it like professionally. And so I kind of learned that through people commenting on my videos, like, this is awesome. Can you post again? When are you going to post? What's your upload schedule? And I'm like, you know, what's an upload schedule? So eventually I figured all that out and I learned about YouTube. And when people validate something that you created, it's a really powerful motivator. And I think that's what fed into it, you know?
I first discovered your channel because I was going to Hawaii on a trip and I'd kind of went back and forth on taking my mountain bike. And so looking at your channel, I discovered this Hawaii video and I was like, okay, this guy's doing like good content. This is quality production here. So it got me wondering, like, does this guy have a background in video production? So what was your background that got you into it, to doing good stuff?
There's a home video of me when I was probably 10, and I got a camcorder for Hanukkah, and I literally cried because I never thought my parents would spring for a camcorder. They got me a really basic one, and because I really wanted to make videos. I'd use like my parents' camcorder, and I would hook it up to the VCR with a bunch of cables and cut out the things I didn't want, because I'd look back at things I would record and say, I don't want to watch this. I want to cut out this part and only have the good stuff. Later on, when I was in like high school, I guess that we had the family camcorder was a little better. It had the FireWire cable. You could plug it into that those kind of clear iMacs. And back That was like the easiest way to edit video. You could actually export it from the camcorder, put it back in and lose no quality, fully edited with music and everything. And so I became obsessed and put it down for a few years. And then later on, fast forward to like mid-20s, I was a web developer. And you're building websites, and what do you put on websites? Videos, pictures. And sometimes I would outsource it, or if it was something simple, I would just do it for the client. And I ended up getting a fair bit of experience doing that. When I started the YouTube channel, I had the microphone, I had a little DSLR, I had everything I needed, and a little bit of experience. I was using iMovie. I wasn't even using anything serious.
I mean, it doesn't take professional equipment to put out professional product. It just takes the experience and know-how.
Agreed. I think that editing videos is really, really easy. If you're talking about just cutting out the parts you don't need, that's the most important part, cutting out the boring stuff. And you could teach anyone to do that. What's really hard to teach them is how to be self-critical and how to look at their own footage through the lens of somebody who doesn't know them at all and has never seen their videos and doesn't have any background. Because those people are only going to find like 1% of it interesting. If you can't be self-critical and you can't just hack away at your stuff emotionlessly, you're not going to be able to edit down anything into a good video.
Oh yeah, agreed. And I think that's one thing that made your videos stand out was, you know, you're going up against people that are posting like, you know, full trail runs from GoPro shots, and you don't want to watch 70% of it. You just want to see that 30%.
Right. And I've tried to teach people how to edit so many times, and that's the part that I can't get through to them about. Like, this part of the trail right here, it just, nobody's going to watch this. You wouldn't watch this if it was somebody else's video, you know?
And I think that goes back to you being, you know, a web developer and working with clients, is knowing how to look at it from the client's eyes to figure out what they want.
Sure.
You've not lived in the Asheville area for too long. How long have you lived here, and what influenced your move to Western North Carolina?
I've been here about 4 years. I've lived in New York. I've lived in the Miami metro area. I've lived places that I thought I wanted to live. You know, growing up in New York, it was really cold. And to me, the winter was just wasted time. I didn't ski or anything like that. So the winter, I was just depressed and just bummed out, just waiting for summer. And you only get a few short months of good weather in New York. And so once I was working from home as a web developer, I had kind of an overreaction in the opposite direction and moved straight down to the warmest part of the country. I lived there for a few years and it actually was good. I was pretty happy there. There was a good mountain biking scene. People really invested a lot of their own time into maintaining the trails and building cool stuff. But there was only one type of terrain and you had to pedal a lot for it. And I like to do all the pedaling up front and then all the enjoyment on the back end. And you need elevation for that. So I moved to Asheville after that, and it was a big move. My wife had to quit her job. We had to take a lot of risks, but we did it, and it really worked out. I know a lot of people make this move. They move to Florida, and they move halfway back, and there's so many people do it. They have a word for it. They call us halfbacks.
Are you proudly wearing that badge as a halfback?
No. I mean, people hate us. You know, there are a lot of people that move from New York or from Florida, and those are heavily populated, kind of high pressure, high stress places. And people oftentimes bring that with them and they drive like that. And we buy houses for more than what people here are willing to pay because it seems like a good deal. And so people hate it. They're like, you're making everything expensive. You're not being chill on the road. So I've really tried to adopt the ways of people here, because I'm sensitive to that. I don't want to ruin it for people who are here.
Yeah, slow it down a little bit.
Only just a little bit. I still, at heart, I'm go, go, go.
You've since changed your channel title from Seth's Bike Hacks to Burn Peak. What was that about?
Well, had I created a YouTube channel that I thought a lot of people were going to watch, I probably would have put more thought into the name. But Seth's Bike Hacks was kind of an afterthought. I started off just calling it Bike Hacks, and I was able to get that YouTube name, but the domain was taken and there were tons of different things around the internet that said Bike Hacks. So when I finally realized it was growing and I had to get a domain and build a website, I had to make it Seth's Bike Hacks, and I changed everything to that. This is actually the second time I changed my YouTube channel name. Going forwards, I was doing a lot of bike hacks and I couldn't come up with any more, because after a while once you've done all the good ones, you're just trying to find ways to like hide zip ties in your handlebars and stuff. And so I had to kind of do it less. I would start putting hacks on a list. And once I got up to 10, that was enough in my eyes to make a good video. And it took longer and longer to come up with 10. And so after a while, people were like, when's the next bike hacks video? The name implies I'm going to be doing something that I'm not doing. It also has nothing to do with what I am doing, which is Burn Peak. I also found that nobody wanted some dude's name on their shirt, and they definitely, the scraggly head, although it was really recognizable, people would rock the stickers, but people didn't really want it on a shirt. And yet, when we did stuff with Burn Peak stickers, Burn Peak shirts, it was everywhere. People wanted it. People thought it was so cool. It was outselling the bike hack stuff, and not that everything's about money, but it's an indicator of what people were taking to. And so I thought it was a little bit of a step back to change everything to Burn Peak, but a good long-term decision because it makes more sense for the channel. It's more recognizable and it just appears more professional.
It does make a good logo. Like, you have the Burn Peak Forest Service sign over your shoulder there in the background, and it's a good logo.
Oh yeah, it's totally cool because it reminds you of a legitimate park, but it's anything but. Which humor is always a part of my channel. And I think it's a little bit of that as kind of a joke. And I think people like to wear it because people are like, what's Burn Peak? Where's Burn Peak? Like, how do I go there? And really it's this like mystical place, kind of. Nobody actually really gets to come here. And so I think that's funny and I think people like it.
When you first started changing things over to Burn Peak, you were also kind of going down the road of trying to establish a bike park in the Asheville area. You know, what do you experience as your first major roadblocks and hurdles in that whole process?
Originally, I'd reached out to Asheville, which is the main city here, and I couldn't talk to anyone. I couldn't get an appointment. I couldn't get a call with anyone. Nobody wanted to talk to me. Now they're going in the opposite direction. They're actually building dirt trails in Asheville. But at the time that I started, nobody would talk to me. And so Pisgah area Sorba, I spoke to Matt, and he knew of all sorts of different people that I could talk to. And when I spoke to the assistant town manager of Canton, he's like, yeah, we got a spot for it. Let's figure this out. And they were scoping out this property that a conservancy was going to buy to prevent it from becoming like a NASCAR training center, which is a whole different story. But anyway,
yeah,
that was the major roadblock, was finding a place to do it and finding a municipality that would cooperate with me. That's going to be the roadblock for anyone starting a bike park, is where are you going to build it? You can't build it on private land unless you want to shoulder the liabilities and costs or make it for profit. You know, you have to pay the property taxes, you have to pay for insurance, and so you necessarily have to make money on it, and I didn't want to do that. Being that it would be high profile because it's on YouTube and getting hundreds of thousands of views, I wouldn't be able to get away with it in the way other people did. And so I needed a public place and I needed some kind of a town to give their blessing. And when you do that, you're at their mercy. Like, oh, those jumps are too big. This is too dangerous. This is, they were really forward thinking and they saw the vision. And so I worked with them, but that was kind of a matter of luck, really. I mean, I could still be searching for somebody to help me right now.
So how did you get linked up with Elevated Trail Designs through all of this?
I had seen Peter's stuff on Instagram all the time. I mean, he was doing a really good job posting it and posting videos and all that. And I mean, if you have a business, it speaks to how important, you know, posting your content online is for advertising. And I had spoken to him a few times. I had run into him at a skate park. He was on his dirt jumper just messing around. And we got to talking and I'm like, you know what, this is definitely the guy that's going to do this project because he has the riding style that I like. On his off day, he's at the skate park on his dirt jumper. He's got dirt jumps in his backyard. This isn't just like a grading company that can also build trails. This is a real mountain biker that does the type of things that I like to do.
Yeah, that's an easy one to pick. And I was super excited and very psyched to see the partnership when you announced the Burn Peak stuff at Canton.
Yeah, I think it was a no-brainer, and he's also a local. And so he's going to be passionate about building something here. He travels all over the place to build trails, and I'm sure he's passionate about those. But, man, to build something in your own backyard, like, you put your heart and soul into it.
How much hands-on and decision-making have you been involved in during this whole process?
I mean, a lot. They kind of told me, I kind of left it up to Peter to decide what part of the mountain would be good. And then, of course, he has to run that by the conservancy and the city and all that. But I was mainly just okaying a lot of his decisions at first because I don't know that much about professional trail building. And so we walked the property a few times. We went up there a few times. We had meetings with the town to figure out what's going on. And I explained to him my vision, which was, A, I want some things here that aren't at other parks. Like, for instance, an upbox. At Whistler, on Dirt Merchant Trail, they have a dirt version of that. On Crab Apple Hits, they have like a dirt version of that. And you'll see it at skate parks and stuff. But I've never been to a bike park in the Southeast that has an upbox. And so, okay, we got to build that. I want lots of step-ups. Like all the things that I know that everybody loves, all the features that get ridden the most or just favored the most, filmed the most at certain parts, I wanted. And I also wanted to build things that would be visually impressive, because inspiring people to take video of it and put it up on Instagram and tag the park is something I wanted, because then all of my viewers who can't make it there can enjoy it too. That was a big part of our discussions and decision making, and now I have a bunch of decision making ahead because we're actually going to start building it. We haven't put any shovels in the ground yet, and so I'm going to be able to decide the trail names and what's on the trails and the length and all that. But I don't want to make decisions that really should be left up to Peter and his team. I don't want to step on their toes, and I've never built a public bike park, and so it's more responsible to trust them in certain areas.
What's been the experience like, essentially having a blank canvas to work with for building bike trails?
So my first blank canvas was Berm Peak, and I learned a lot from that. One thing I learned is that it's the worst place I could have chosen. It's completely rhododendron thickets. It's also like shaped like a wedge. There's barely any variation in terrain. I just saw a giant hill and I was like, that's perfect. There are not that many rocks here unless you dig down. And so that was my first blank canvas, and I learned so much from that. And so this is my second blank canvas, and I learned that planning is one of the most important parts. And luckily, that is an important part of professional trail building, and that's got to be part of it. And Peter went and scoped out the entire area. We walked that property, I can't even count how many times. Like, I could draw a picture of it right now from my head. He went and flagged all the trails. When you flag trails, you can kind of walk that flag line and kind of imagine yourself riding it. Then you can adjust the flags. And before you put a shovel in the ground, you can sort of mock up and try to imagine what that trail is going to be. And so working with a blank canvas can be a little bit overwhelming, but if you break it down into steps, it's really not that bad. Once we start putting shovels in the ground, we may make adjustments from there, but at least we have a really good starting point.
Did you pull inspiration from any other bike parks or trail systems when it came to planning this out?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I've been to so many places in the country now as a result of the YouTube channel, and I've seen so many trail systems that have been built from scratch recently with like the best modern technology and practices. Been to Whistler a bunch of times, that's always a huge... Whistler kind of ruins everything, because once you go there, any bike park you go to, you're like, why isn't this Whistler? And I think that's kind of changed. I think a lot of people get it now, and they're building big jump lines, some of them even better than the stuff you see at Whistler. But I wanted a place where you could just have jump after jump after jump and get lots of air. And I don't want a pump track. I'm not going to build a pump track there. Like, people say they want a pump track and then they don't actually ride it. I want to be able to pedal up, get on a trail that goes downhill the whole way, not have to pedal and hit a bunch of jumps. I know my favorite trails going places are like that. And so that's what I wanted.
So you have some BMX background, right?
Sure. As a kid, I mountain biked a little bit, but Long Island doesn't really have that much mountain biking, or it didn't at the time. And BMX, I mean, all my friends were doing it. You can go off of jumps, you can go to a staircase and have fun. And so my whole childhood, I was a quote, serious BMXer. I don't think I was a serious mountain biker until later on in my life.
You mentioned something that kind of touched on me, where you want to drop in and not have to pedal.
Yeah.
As a previous BMXer, you know, like when you go to a jump line, like the key is to not pedal. Like, you get called out for pedaling in between jumps.
You do. You get called out for it. And it's also, it throws you off.
Yeah.
It's just bad riding, you know, not just because it doesn't look good. And that's a whole different part of BMX, you know, the whole fashion show part of it. But it's also just bad for yourself. You're trying to set up for the next jump so you can bust a trick or do something. And so pumping and not having to pedal is a big part of it. And so when I started mountain biking, I craved that because it was what I experienced as a kid. It was joyful.
How do you think this is going to change the riding scene in like the Asheville, Western North Carolina area?
I think before the Riveter and Canoga, Colo was the only bike park in the Asheville, you know, central Asheville. And I think they were afraid they couldn't make money from it because they kind of placed more of the emphasis on zip lines and things like that at that park. It was like an adventure center. And now they're building all new jumps and the place is becoming awesome. And I think that's because they saw an increase in people on dirt jumpers, an increase of people wanting to do it. And that all kind of happened at the same time. The Riveter got built. That's a private park. People are paying to go there. Colo, that place is completely slammed every weekend, and people are gladly forking over cash to go there. So if people are willing to pay to ride that, of course they're going to be willing to do it for free. And so to me, it's a no-brainer, but to city planners and maybe people who don't ride mountain bikes, it's not so obvious. And so somebody needed to do it first. I think once this gets built and everybody sees how successful it is, different towns circling Asheville are going to start to do the same, or they're going to recognize that doing the same might be a good idea.
To me, growing up in North Carolina, I've watched other states be more progressive in building skate parks, dirt jump spots, and even mountain bike trails. And for some reason, North Carolina has always lagged on that. And it's good to finally see some towns being more progressive going that direction.
It's insane because A, we have tons of riders. B, we have a BMX scene all over North and South Carolina. Like, there's so many like pro BMXers come from those areas and are switching over to mountain biking. And most importantly, we have unlimited perfect clay for building dirt jumps. you know, most of them were kind of hidden or in somebody's private property or something. And we're just watching the entire West Coast explode with free, amazing jump parks. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating. I think a lot of people have moved away from the East Coast because of that. We have mountains, we have clay, we have riders, but nobody's investing in it, or they weren't before.
And so this is a huge change, and we're all glad to see it happen.
Totally.
So Burn Park will be a section inside the much larger Canton Trail system. How are things going to be different between the two zones?
Originally, their plan was to build that trail system there. That was always on the books before I even talked to them. And so when I told them I wanted to build, you know, a more focused bike park, we started coming up with ways to integrate it. We thought having pedal up single track that people could ride just like they would at Bent Creek or Pisgah, having a bike park right there makes perfect sense because everybody's already traveling there to ride. It's already going to be jam-packed with riders. And they agreed to build the trail system in such a way where all the trails kind of converge at the bottom in the same place, which is the top of Burn Park. So after you've gone for like a real ride where you really climbed and you really rode single track, you can come out and sort of do a celebration lap at Burn Park and then do another one if you want, you know, endless party laps after your ride. For that reason, we're building Burn Park for trail bikes. We're building Burn Park for the bikes that are going to be up on the mountain. We're not doing a dirt jumper specific park or a BMX specific park. It's definitely for the people that are going to be there anyway. And that may improve some people's skills. I mean, let's say you're not much of a jumper and you ride that main trail system. And now you can start going downhill again on maybe a flow trail or something and start getting a little air each time and eventually step up to the intermediate jumps and, you know, beyond.
That's a good way to plan it out because I love doing, you know, some good trail bike rides. But like you mentioned, the post trail ride party lap on something's really fun.
Yeah. I mean, imagine you could ride in Pisgah and then when you're done, it's like, all right, let's hit the jumps. We can't do that right now. Like, that'd be amazing. We're going to have that soon.
Yeah, you're making it.
Kind of, you know, part of it's I want to give back to the community, but I got to admit a little bit of it is just selfish. Like, I want to have access to that.
Do you guys have a construction timeline in place yet?
We do. I'm not making that totally public because I'm padding it.
Okay.
What I told the viewers is not the real timeline. The real timeline could potentially be a lot quicker. Knowing from project management and web development, when you're depending on other people, subcontractors and things like that, you have to account for error or weather or who knows.
And some things are just totally out of your control.
We could have the rainiest spring in 200 years. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. And the second I say I'm going to build a bike park, I'm going to get messages like, is it done yet?
How much do you see yourself being involved in the actual build of the trails?
Not much. I think if you've ever seen a professional trail build go down, 90% of it's done with a machine, which you need a skilled machine operator for. And then you have finishers, and one machine operator and two finishers can do more work than 100 volunteers who don't necessarily know what they're doing. They've never built a bike park before. And while it sounds great, let's get the community together and build this, it's not that efficient. And so the parts that I'm going to be involved in are the parts at the top where people can hang out. Maybe a little skills skinny course, a seating area, bike repair station, things like that. So I'm going to also be freed up to document it because I'm not going to be digging. When I do things on Burn Peak, my hands are covered in dirt and now I got to operate a camera. Like, I go through cameras like that. And it also makes the builds take like 5 times as long because I'm constantly changing camera angles and running back up to the top for batteries. And being able to just document it and give it my all, like making the videos about it, is going to be cool. I want to do this in a way where it's going to come out the best and that the videos are going to come out the best. And I think that's the way to go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let the professionals do the things that they're professional at.
Right. Exactly.
How can people follow along with the progress of Burn Park?
I would just follow some certain Instagram accounts. Obviously, me, Sets Bike Hacks, Elevated Trail Design, the City of Canton, even to some extent, the Southern Appalachian Highlands Conservancy. If you follow all those accounts, anytime there's something going on with Burn Park, it's going to get posted. And, you know, obviously, my YouTube channel. we're going to be posting videos about that this spring. When we break ground, we're going to film it. When we start building trails that can actually be rideable, we're going to film it. And we're going to explain everything. And if you want to support it, you could also go to my Patreon, Seth's Bike Hacks, and it's going to change to Burn Park, and you'll find it if you Google it.
Well, Seth, I really appreciate your time. Thanks for being on the show. And you know, from all of us, we're definitely looking forward to ripping some party laps on Burn Park.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it too, and thanks for having me.
Man, I'm really excited to hear about Burn Peak and everything, but I'm also excited to learn about the single track trails that are going to be built out there.
Yeah, I know they're still dialing in a lot of the details, and they're still kind of tight-lipped about that right now as far as the details and like trail mileage, where they're going, etc. But I have spoken with Peter Mills from Elevated Trail Designs, and we will have him on the show when he is able to talk about that stuff. So, you know, something to look forward to on a future episode of Pisgah Podcast.
For sure, yeah. Peter does excellent work, too, so I'm excited to see what he comes up with. And speaking of yard trails, he's got about one of the most amazing yard setups I've ever seen.
Yeah, his jump line in his backyard is amazing.
But don't ask us where it's at.
Nope, or him. Just don't. This week, weather-wise, we're actually looking pretty good for a mid-late January week. For the most part, the weekend looks very pleasurable. Saturday morning may have some freeze-thaw early in the morning. And then Sunday, the low is actually 37, and that is in Fletcher. So for the region, but I would say that if you're going to ride something like Bennett Gap, you should take advantage of riding a seasonal trail, and instead of keeping left onto lower Bennett Gap, maybe fork right and go ride down Coon Tree if you've never done it before. It's something cool. But I did hear that there is a tree down towards the bottom, so heads up on that.
Okay, 10-4, that's good to know.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode of the Pisgah Podcast. As always, you can follow us on social media. Just search Pisgah Podcast.
And if you've ever been challenged on whether or not to ride your local trails or whether to ride the backyard, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and go ahead and share this with your friends.
Yeah. Brad Newby's backyard. Poor Brad. He always had hard decisions to make.
There's been a bunch of legends in this area with the really cool backyard.